Me.
He's ready.
Oh, hi.
Hi. Welcome to episode 32 of the No Skips podcast, or just No Skips podcast. I'm Lisa.
Or NS.
NSP.
I'm Jack.
This is our show. We are, first of all, if you're listening tonight for the first time, welcome. We are a married couple that do this show. This is purely for fun. It is, you know, loosely research-based, but mostly just we're listening
more,
to albums.
Yeah, more impressions, thoughts, just us and our lives listening to music that we probably wouldn't take time out, because honestly, who does right now?
Right.
You know, go farther afield than some comforting classics.
Right.
Just listen to stuff you maybe don't listen to right now.
That was my whole thing. The whole premise is that I only listened to singles or just stuff that I sort of knew, and there was an entire, I don't know, arena of music I didn't know. And
you,
so,
and you found some new favorites, haven't you?
I found some stuff I will be avoiding in the future.
That has its utility as well.
Sure. Tonight, we're covering Creedence Clearwater Revival's Green River.
Their second of three LPs released in 1969.
And their third studio album, is that correct?
I believe so.
Yeah. Dropped August 1969, yeah, the second they released that year, as you mentioned in the outro for the Tupac episode from last week.
As one must talk about John Fogerty when talking about Tupac.
It's true. Creedence Clearwater. Creedence? It's a bit of a tongue twister. Also,
a little bit.
Also Gimlet. Creedence Clearwater Revival is composed of every person with the last name Fogerty.
It's just him and his bro?
That's too many Fogertys.
That's too many Fogertys.
Too many Fogertys. Stu Cook and Doug Clifford, the main.
And so on paper, you start to think of this origin story as being a little short because CCR was only in operation as CCR for about 5 years. But they had played together, the sort of the core members of the band, at least three of them. Mm-hmm. John Fogerty and his brother Tom, and at least one other I can't call it to mind right now. I think the drummer. Had been playing together as
Blue Velvets
and the Gollywogs.
Which is a great name.
I'd say they all hated the name, or at least maybe their new studio hated
it. It's terrible, which is why they should have kept it.
Right. But then Creedence came from a buddy named Creedence, and Clearwater from a beer commercial, and Revival because they were, before the term roots rock had been invented, they were sort of a back to basics as far as that goes. And what act that was, because here's a band from California, San Francisco, basically, where a lot of like great late 60s, you're thinking psych rock, you're thinking Janis Joplin, you think of a lot of the sound that came from that era and that part of the United States, and they're like, none of that. We're going to pretend to be Southern as hell. We're going to we're singing about bayous, but in that act, I would say they've created this really long-lasting kind of almost mythic tapestry of the American South and a distillation. I mean, I think the distillation of the American South's sound, they loved great bluesmen. I think they distilled that quite properly. But as far as the iconography and the sort of the storytelling quotient, it kind of just floats off.
So you're saying they were not from the South originally?
They were not from the South.
You liars.
Isn't that crazy?
You sack of shit.
Next time you're going to tell me Freebird's not from the South.
You sack. Well, because this upsets me very much because I was like, this just feels like Southern Comfort, the album.
Right.
And they're liars.
Right.
Liars. The whole lot of them.
Just more California liars. But
take that, Californians. I think you guys are all pretty great.
I was going to say the story of
you're all better
especially,
than me, so.
Especially great Californian musicians, especially from this era, is a very, very long list.
Absolutely.
But yeah, CCR is that's fascinating to me. From the time they took that moniker, that renewed moniker, to insane stardom, to the acrimonious bickering and legal stuff, and then Fogerty's brother leaves the band, and then lawsuits and yada yada yada, and that would go on for decades. We're not focusing on that because
I didn't read up on that at all.
Well, that's good because it's like, hey, whoa, let me get on this music podcast and talk about some lawsuits,
right?
But there was something special there. Again, just the Herculean effort to turn in three LPs in a year.
That's insane.
This album alone, I think, is a strong year's worth of effort. It's tight, doesn't overstay its welcome. Not all hits, but there are some very, like, out of, because most people are probably know CCR from just the Greatest Hits Collection, as is very common, because this is something we talked about, you know, in this show, is that a lot of the acts from this time were just like, all right, maybe I'll put a couple standards. And there are, you know, the Nighttime Is the Right Time is a cover.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of acts would just do covers, do standards, and then, you know, do some original material and just put it out, man. Don't worry about it. It's cool.
Okay.
And I think that's something really powerful about, I think that has maybe been lost sometimes, because I think people, I love the album as an art form, but to approach the album and be like, this has to be an enduring document forever. It's like, maybe just play some good music and then don't make it too long. And this doesn't overstay a welcome. That's what I like. How did you come to Green River? How did it hit you?
This ain't it, boy. This was not it. Because I was so surprised, because I was like, okay, I've known my ex-stepdad loved CCR. And I mean, he was a down-home Southern boy, so of course he did. Sure. But I was just like, this is stuff that I remember hearing on and off.
Sure.
And I was like, it's late 60s rock. Not rock like traditional, you know, Led Zeppelin style or anything like that. But it certainly, it's not British rock per se.
It's very traditional, but yeah.
Right.
Not,
but
not
it's,
the stuff that you're into.
Yeah, not the stuff that I've been, you know, gravitating towards. And so I was excited for it. It did not land for me. I was very, this was just like one 36-minute long one song. I felt like I couldn't really differentiate between them. And so in that case, it felt like, I'm not saying that these songs weren't big hits, because obviously right. some of them absolutely were, but it's just like, quality over quantity, boys. You didn't have to drop three albums in a year. Maybe you did, because certainly it seemed like he had a lot of pressure on him to continue to write music and whatnot, but it was just like, you didn't have to. I mean, there could have been some diversity here. A lot of them felt exactly the same.
That's the blues influence again.
Yeah, probably, but
because almost I'm not. You're not crazy. As much as I'd like to take a moment to make fun of you for that
right.
you know, appreciation of it, but I don't disagree in terms that they're so rooted to very like. They're professed, because as some of the critics point out, and if you just sort of listen to their music, the interesting thing is a lot of their music was politically conscious mm-hmm. and centered on some of those themes, but also on sort of imagistic kind of songs, to the point where very few of the songs, for example, relate to romantic love,
right.
which is kind of the standard for this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And unlike their peers, right, it's not a psych rock sound. It's really kind of, again, the revival in the title, which calls together many connotations, religious, you know, just throwback, whatever in general. But I think that sound, especially, I think it really comes out on track three, right? Like where you have...
Tombstone Shadow. Mm-hmm.
Where it's like the guitar, and even though they double it, the solo is only a couple of notes, which is a very blues kind of thing to do. Like, do the most with the least. And if you start, especially if you went through and just like listen to the first couple of seconds and then skip to the next track and listen to the first couple of seconds, you could be totally forgiven to be like, that's the same intro.
It's the same damn song.
I should hope John Fogerty had like, you know, like umpire style, like hand signals to his band, because you can't just start up playing the song, because they all start the same way.
Yeah, the drumming. I mean, I guess if you really take the blues style influence, then yeah, a lot of that is forgiven. But I was just like, this drummer is just doing the same shit. The guitarist is doing the same shit. But it can be forgiven because it is what it is. It was a stamp of like whatever this was meant to be. And it wasn't what it was. It was not what it was not meant to be.
Yeah.
So that's okay. I can take that with a grain of salt. Let's get into the album itself.
Sure.
Green River, track one. So from Fogerty himself, I used a setting like New Orleans, but I would actually be talking about things from my own life. Green River is actually about a place called Puta Creek near Winters, California.
Doesn't roll off the tongue the same way.
No, Puta Creek or Puta. I don't know. But I'm going to say Puta because that sounds better.
Puta Creek.
Oh, wait. That's a bad word in Spanish.
That's how it
Puta.
Goes.
Puta. Puta Creek.
It honestly could be that.
I like that better. Puta Creek. You can't say that. Continue.
But I think that's the genius that you see there is that he had, as with most Americans through the 20th century, right before the heavy urbanization, a lot of people had, you know, fairly rural childhoods. And with the right kind of eyes, just as, I mean, a lot of the artists that we cover, an artist can take something that was personal and then universalize it.
Right.
Here's a guy that was writing songs that people are like, oh, good old Southern boy. Not from the South. Yet there's an element of truth there insofar as it's a universal, right?
Right.
Like, he was interested in some of these kinds of moods, and certainly the way he's throwing his voice and the way it's recorded, because they were so obsessed with the blues. But it's funny to imagine him in some, you know, Californian little creek as a kid, and none of the sort of Southern...
You could pretend, though. You could absolutely pretend, sure. And that would feel like you have been transported somewhere far, far away, which is exactly what he did here.
And
so.
Power music, right?
Yeah, that's
transport.
True. I don't think there are catfish in California. There might be, but it doesn't sound like something that, yeah, a log or catfish by a rope hanging from a tree to swing on, skipping rocks.
Sure.
It's like the most perfect.
Yeah.
Country boys upbringing, right. and girls.
Sure, exactly. Again, universal themes, right?
Yeah.
But you just have to touch all the same kind of chords and you're there.
Yeah, and understanding that the world is on fire, smoldering, and you can just come on home if it sucks, which is fine.
Yeah.
They were from the Bay Area?
Yeah, as a band. Again, I think they're all from California.
Lion sacks of shit. This is throwing me totally on my ass. Because
scaled
it's just like
from my eyes.
Because it's just like there is not knowing that aspect of it, because I didn't research that part too much at all, as sure. You know, as evidenced by my profound concern here. But it was just
Clearwater concern.
concern.
Revival.
It made it seem so real to be like, of course this country boy doesn't like the city and you just want to be transported somewhere else.
Is that any more ridiculous than Led Zeppelin going crazy for the blues half a world away?
About a disaster that didn't happen in their country?
in their lifetime or their country.
They can be forgiven because they are Led Zeppelin.
Right, but that's the power of it, right?
But even then, when I do listen to When the Levee Breaks, I still feel like, you don't know. You weren't there. You can't sing about this. This wasn't yours.
That's a great song,
so continue.
But that's a very modern sensibility. It wasn't always this way. We basically don't have the backbone thread of the 20th century and 21st century of popular music. Now, not to say there wasn't some profiteering shit, some appropriating and some stealing off the backs. Again, popular music is black music, right? The progenitors of blues, which is to say the progenitors of rock and roll music, at least the guys that usually made the money tended, not always, but tended to actually give credit where it's due. Elvis sang a bunch of standards similarly into the style of black musicians, right? He cribbed a lot of his playbook and tended to be open about it because he was just a lover of this stuff. Now, you know, the material effects of this is another question, but the point is not from the social justice perspective, but from a listener's perspective, and this wonderful chain of incredible art we now have. I mean, that's a crazy part to me, because yes, you have incredible traditions of music that span hundreds of years.
Okay.
But it's a different thing altogether once you get into the realm of recorded music. And we had some pretty insanely shitty recordings for many years. I'd say 30s through, and finally through the 40s. Like, most people know, like, In the Mood, right? Mm-hmm. You know? So I think in the 40s some of that starts. But especially through the 50s, it's crazy to me that now there's enough sort of pop cultural continuity that even though we can laugh and it feels very distant, poodle skirts, let's go get a malt, you know.
Sounds great.
Driving our
can
baby,
we?
Please do. But we understand that. That's a lexicon that is mutually intelligible. Mm-hmm. And that's a crazy long run. And so we have these sort of multiple, look at something like the Black Keys, right? The Black Keys represent a kind of like revival on revival on revival effort of like guys that like the blues.
Mm-hmm.
That's like these decade cycles of, and these guys in 1969 are like, ugh, can't we just get back to the old times? It's like, dog, that was like just 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah. So we are nearly halfway done with the length of the album, and we've gone through one song, so we need to keep moving. Track two is Commotion, not Locomotion, not the cover by Cyndi Lauper, which I thought...
I don't think it's actually Cyndi Lauper. We were talking about this ahead of time. Anyway, doesn't who cares? Matter. Love you, Cyndi Lauper. Goodbye.
It's a song about how shitty life is in the city, and he's not wrong that life in the city can be aggravating, but
sure.
I don't know, like... Even we've discussed, like, sometimes I have this draw to move to the country just a little bit, but I've it's more fun to just visit. I don't actually want to live there. So country
The stillness gets to you.
Yeah, and also the bugs.
Mostly the bugs.
And also the movie Strangers. So there are a lot of things that keep me in the city. There's comfort in numbers.
Yeah.
So, but you know what, Fogarty, you can have the country if you want it.
But again, this sort of the universalizing, like, oh man, that guy's telling it like it is kind of sentiment. That's a very broad populist sentiment. I think that was released as a B-side for one of these songs, either Green River or Bad Moon, and it did very well on its own charting. So,
well, if you don't like the city, you can just stay in the pasture.
Wow, right. Love the pasture. Doom, 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 doom.
Is that a song?
I was singing from Commotion.
Oh, I was just like, I didn't know where we were going with that. I was like, I want to know that song, actually.
Hey, I love the pasture.
So, Tombstone Shadow. So it sounds like he's cursed with bad luck. He just feels like everywhere he goes, there's some kind of like curse or something on him. But then it also sounds like perhaps like a gypsy person put a curse on him, and that there's like selling him wares to...
Here's
like
the thing.
Charms
what
to
I,
get it off.
I feel like with the blues style guitar playing, I think even Green River has a little bit of menace to the guitar playing. Am I wrong?
I kind of. I don't know. Again, every song sounded the same. I can't differentiate between what happened listening to this album this whole week.
Tombstone Shadow has the one where they do a really nice... And that, to me, I think that's what I love about this era is... One LP, right? A side, B side, about 40 minutes. That's right. What you get to work with. And also in recording, they're like, we ain't going to take 3 fucking years on this shit. Like,
3 months at best.
Exactly. Or in these cases, maybe 3-4 weeks, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's a vitality that comes with doing it quick. And so there's some nice, there's a double tracked, the guitar part for this. It's a very limited range. It's just like really hammering on just a couple of notes. That's a fun song.
That's it.
I thought so. Again, from the pop music, rock and roll, you have like a couple of subjects. And so anyone that deigns to be like, hey, I don't know, I've got a curse. And then the listener's like, and it's a sexy lady and you miss her. And it's like, no, I just... Life stuff, right? Like
sexy lady, if you missed her.
You know?
Yeah. That's good. Wrote a song for everyone.
This is like, okay, it's definitely 1969 now.
Yeah.
Right? This very broad, sentimental kind of like what the hippies lost, right? Of like in this time, you can imagine the swaying hippies at Woodstock listening to this kind of song where it's like, I wrote a song for everyone. And they're like, yeah, man.
You sure did, man. Man.
Tell it.
Love you.
Yeah. I don't know if you can write it. You certainly can't write a song that same way, but Fogarty has always been that kind of voice. I appreciate that it's fairly sparing on this album because, boy, you get more than one song like this and you're like, all right, Get back to it, please.
This, do you know the basis of the song?
No.
So it was apparently a song that John wrote for his then wife when their son was about 2.5 years old. I think he was like 23 or something like that. Quite young to have a 2.5 year old. But the 60s are a little bit different time. But he was so stressed out by being, you know, under the foot of like constantly needing to produce. I mean, because, you know, 3 albums in 1 year, that's a big tight time crunch. He's working tirelessly to make the band work and keeping it going. He's just churning out song after song after song, but then not being able to manage his family. Like, and so his thing was like, I could write a song for everyone, but I can't talk to you. I think that was what he, that was his like sentiment.
That's a bummer.
Yeah. So it was, you know, I think it was like, they had had like a minor, it wasn't even a fight. He said it was just like a little bit of a tiff. And she left with their son. And that was kind of his thought. Like, he was in the middle of writing the song or something like that. And he was just like, wow, I can do all of this, but I can't do this.
I was going to say, you know? that's the underpinning melancholy to the song. Damn.
Right. So that ends side one. We are on side two now with Bad Moon Rising. Dope.
One of the real standards up there, probably over their top. I want to say top 5 songs, but maybe not. They had a lot of big songs, which if I look at their Wikipedia, they, as far as chart topping,
this got number 2.
I was going to say
2 on the Billboard Hot 100.
Mm-hmm. Specifically, that one really tripped me up. Specifically, Chronicle, which is, you know, from 76, which is their 20 greatest hits.
Okay.
Is still on the Billboard 200 album chart and reached the 500 weeks mark.
Jeez.
In December of 2020.
Wow.
CCR.
Who are you trying to be, Pink Floyd? Get out of here.
Yeah. And so, yes, not this album, but like the aggregate, including several of the songs here. I mean, that's staying power.
Yeah.
And speaking from personal experience, once you become a dad, your desire to listen to CCR comes up about 400 to 500%.
This is true. I felt like I had like a little bit of a pot belly growing. All week.
Right.
And I was just like, okay, my feet are standing a little bit more duck splayed. Yes, the urge to get a truck rising.
Rising.
I feel the urge to buy a truck rising. I need that truck. In fact, honestly, I swear, today after I picked up the kids, I was behind a truck. I was like, that's a nice truck.
Hey, and I'm like, you see this truck?
I followed that truck for a while just so I could look at it more. And it was because of Creedence Clearwater Revival. This was a massive hit by the band, like I said, hitting number 2. The hurricane imagery in this song stems from the 1941 film The Devil and Daniel Webster. And it was written, the song was written the same day that Nixon was elected president. And it became a bit of an anthem for the Vietnam War and all the peace protests and everything like that. This is also around the time where all hell broke loose culturally with like the Martin Luther King assassination,
yes.
Robert F. Kennedy, whatnot. Now, what I love about this was in reading up on this, I misread the quote. And I read it as Fogerty saying, no, this wasn't a metaphor. It was just about weather. But it was...
Why is everyone reading into this? I just love the moon.
Moon and hurricanes.
Actually, I hate the moon is the problem.
It's a bad moon.
Does anyone notice this?
The point. It's a bad moon.
I hate that moon.
The B-side.
Everyone hates the moon. Didn't do so hot. They left that one off the album.
The moon can go to hell.
A whole collection of moon hating songs by John Fogerty.
And moon-hating songs by CCR. But yes, obviously, I read that wrong, and he was like, no, this is a metaphor.
Sure.
And I was like, damn it, because I'm a weather person. I'm a storm chaser. So I was like, oh, did I read this? Doth my eyes deceive me? This is a song about weather? It was not. It was a song about turmoil.
The turmoil.
Bad Moon Rising, such a big one. So
yeah, unbeatable. I mean, what can you say? You know this song. You may be tired of it, but you're going to hear it on the radio.
And you're going to continue to hear it forever. Lodi.
I love this track because specifically I want to highlight
what you want to highlight there, boy.
Ike and Tina Turner, who are somewhat twinned in the memory of CCR because they did such an incredible, and I didn't actually know this. We were just talking about this just before the show. I did not know that Proud Mary was a John Fogerty original song because arguably it's more famous in the incredible, incredible Ike and Tina Turner cover.
Okay.
It's so spirited. Especially if you see a live performance of it, it's just, it knocks your socks off. Unbelievable. What I think about it is because there was a, I want to say on the Onion AV Club, but there was a wonderful inventory of songs that were kiss-offs to specific places. And Ike and Tina Turner have a song called Nutbush. And it's the song, or it's a song about like the little town that they're from.
Oh.
And at first it's like, you know, it's folks are like this and nothing much really ever happens. And they're a bunch of ignorant assholes. Like it just escalates. And it's
that
like,
song about my hometown.
I hate you. Exactly. I hate, you need to listen to Nutbush.
Okay.
And Lodi is a similar thing where it's like, that's a real place. And it's like, imagine like the fist pumping anthem from being from there and be like, oh, fuck, that guy's upset because he's stuck in our town.
But like, he had never been there.
Doesn't matter. Lodi is a real place for everyone. Everyone has a Lodi.
It's in Northern California, but yeah, everyone's been there. I think for me, growing up, that would have been like I'm from Corsicana, Texas, but sure. I think it would have been like Ennis, Texas, which is right. Way better than us now. But yeah, it's just about a song about like efforts making it in the business as becoming a musician,
mm-hmm.
and then getting stuck in a shitty town overnight and not doing well. Now this one, how on point is this line? Okay, because you know every singer songwriter who was up and coming has felt this way. If I only had a dollar for every song I sung, every time I've had to play while people sat there drunk.
Oh yeah. Again, it's you don't have to be a singer-songwriter to put yourself in their eyes and then look out at this sort of like, you know, half disinterested crowd and just be like, oh man, what am I doing?
This sucks.
What am I doing?
Right.
And that again, the universalizing impulse. I'm not a performing musician. I'm an artist, but I'm not a performing musician. And to think about that and think about, again, universally speaking, everyone's had a Lodi experience of just being like, I just need to try and get to where I'm trying to go, but now I'm stuck in a rut in this piece of shit place. So that's a classic track for that.
My teen years. I get it. Yeah. Cross Tie Walker. Simple little song.
Yeah.
About like a drifter who just does some train hopping and whatnot.
Yeah. Again, Americana.
To me, felt like the most forgettable song on the album.
Ooh.
Take that, Tree Fingers. I found it.
You found your Tree Fingers. Perhaps. I'll have to think about that one, but I think so.
It just wasn't that memorable.
Sure.
Most of them weren't, but this one especially felt like, okay, I would skip this one.
Fair enough.
And I would. So, Sinister Purpose.
Love it. Again, I love when they dip into the sort of the spooky atmosphere because there's a, maybe it's just the blues. Maybe it's just the way the guitar player played. There's just something the way the band comes together. I think there's an economy of sound. And yes, yeah, a lot of the songs do kind of start out the same. But that's a lot of blues stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very limited range, and it's about getting maximal expressive range and emotional realness out of, you know, a very limited palette.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this album really does that well, and I like Sinister Purpose for that.
Do you?
I do.
To me, it's just like, yes, hello. I'm the devil. Hey, hello, yes, how are you? I'm well. I'm just here to take your soul and change for some pretty cool shit. Neat.
But again, there you could like 15 songs about, oh, I wish I had a girlfriend.
I would like that because I could connect to it better. I've never made deals with the devil.
This is dad rock, huh?
Yeah. Dads forget about the girlfriends. They start thinking about the devil.
They start thinking about, what if the devil try to come and take my truck?
I'll get him. I'll install security cameras.
Sinister Dodge Ram.
the most sinister drug of them all. The nighttime is the right time.
Yeah. Cover.
This song sucked. I called this song Caca Blues.
Ladies and gentlemen. It's a cover. I thought it was a lot of fun. I think you should give it plaudits for sounding like a different song of the other songs.
Yes, it did, but then I was like, whoa, this is even worse. Go back to the thing where it just sounded like one droning guitar just background at a shitty dive bar. Please.
No.
It wasn't it. Sound. This wasn't it, boy.
Did you listen to any of this stuff on headphones?
What was that?
Did you listen to any of this album on headphones?
No. I did not get a chance to do that this week.
Oh, well,
Would I have liked it better? Maybe.
Maybe.
Bitch, I might.
Yeah, I just... You at least, this morning, you had it cranked up pretty high, which is a good way to make sure that... You know,
I was cycling to it, which is an effort. It made it a little bit of an easier cycle, because I was like, I want to keep up with whatever's happening here.
There were some comments that I saw about how the band, under the various guises, you know, before being CCR, had played for, you know, close to or basically a decade prior, like the nucleus of the group, and that there are ways that you can respond to each other that you can't without that kind of history and that kind of time. And that's really fascinating to me in a creative sense about, like, yeah, sometimes people come together and sparks fly and it's you know, they play off each other, but there's something to be said for a really tight group that have played for them or long enough. I don't know. I think that's CCR in a nutshell for me.
Well, this album served as a palate cleanser, and in some ways it was. Like sniffing nice perfumes at a store.
Yeah,
and
something different.
This is the canister of coffee beans that have been there for
nice,
10 months.
Short canister.
Very short canister of coffee beans. Credence, I'm sorry. I really thought this was going to be it. And it wasn't. And that's okay. I learned something new. That's okay. That's all right. What's your takeaway?
You tried it out. Jangly.
Jangly.
Yeah. There's just something about that. There's a sort of an eternal aspect to those guitar riffs, the voice, the vocal processing. Like the one of the cited genres was like swamp rock or something. And it's just
a good
like
one.
It's hilarious because I'm like, let's dig in on swamp rock.
Don't do it.
This is a swamp rock podcast primarily now.
This is yeah.
Right.
I'm not into it. my takeaway is whiskey. It just felt like no matter what, I was just drinking whiskey all week.
Yeah.
Even if I was just listening to this,
right.
It was a glass of whiskey in my hand.
When they own that, and we haven't even talked about the Vietnam War, which, you know, of course, Fortunate Son, some of these other songs are so heavily twinned to that imagery, and yet they're bigger than that to me. Like you say, there's an Americana about it where it's like, am I sitting on a back porch drinking whiskey and a gator is piloting a fan boat, like
he's chasing. Waving at me. He's very nice.
He's very nice.
He keeps a nice tidy home. His name is John. That's Creedence Clearwater Revival, Green River. Oh right. Boy!
Don't try not to get too excited.
I'm not. Don't worry. This I really thought it was going to be better for me than it was. That's okay. It wasn't. It served its purpose to be a speed bump in the road.
Speed bump.
What was
John
that?
John Fogerty.
Swamp rock. Let's keep going.
John Fogerty is not a speed bump.
Correct. He's not. He's a much more talented musician than I'm giving credit for, but this just wasn't it. However,
fair enough.
Next week, we are doing Ready to Die by Notorious B.I.G.
Notorious B.I.G.
I don't
Back
really,
to the
it's
East
It's not
West
a double
Coast.
Album. It's just a very big album. Is that correct?
Yeah. I think you looked it up. It was
I think it's a single album.
70 minutes. Okay. 60, 70.
I thought it was... whatever it is, we're doing it.
Sure.
We're going to cover Ready to Die next week. So we've done West Coast with Tupac, which was a 2-week endeavor for 27 tracks.
Yes.
And now we've done our palate cleanser, and now we're moving on to Notorious B.I.G. So I'm excited to hear that.
So put it in, people. Let's
you can't
let's
say
get
that.
Strapped. No, put it in. This week, we're putting it in. Notorious B.I.G., that is. And you're like, you can't say that. We don't use physical media anymore. Well, put it into your search box, Notorious B.I.G., and enjoy all the fucking stupid ads that YouTube puts in front of you, because we all stopped paying for the internet, and now we just get horrible shit.
What I love forever. About listening to the music from here is that it will start, it'll be like, well, you spent all week listening to this, so this is suddenly your thing now. So
right.
So YouTube music is like, well, here's SZA, and here's like this electronic track you like, and guess what, get ready, here's Tupac. Like, I wasn't ready for that, the kids can't hear this, and before I have a moment to turn it off, he's already like,
yeah,
throwing down about biatches and Alizé. Biatch. So we still have a tiny bit of Alizé left. That's for you, baby.
Wow,
a little tip for being so pretty. Well, we've made it under the 36-minute mark, so let's wrap up. Thank you guys so much for listening. We have a Twitter at No Skips Podcast, and we have a Facebook group. There's like 10 people there. It doesn't matter. But
I still love you, John Fogerty. Don't listen to the hater on the podcast.
I am indifferent. Whatever the case is, thank you guys so much for listening. We will be back. We will be back next week with Notorious B.I.G.'s Ready to Die. Bye.